Hello, everybody, and welcome to Digitally Uploaded, the digitallydownloaded.net podcast. With me this week, it's a quiet one. It's just the one person. It's Jay from JRPG. Hello, Jay. How you doing?
Hey, not bad, everyone.
Good, good. So we've got a lot to talk about this week, and since we do have a JRPG specialist on, I think we'll probably spend a lot of time talking about JRPGs, which is good because there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
It's the best stuff, isn't it? Makes for a good conversation.
It is. It's been a good year for JRPGs.
It's one of the best years on record, I think. Like, going back to think of how many great games there have been just this year, I can't think of a year that tops it off the top of my head.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in terms of the quality and quantity, obviously every year's thrown up some good JRPGs, but this year it's just been endless, like from start to finish. We just haven't had a chance to have a breather from all the great games. So yeah, any other year, a half dozen of them could easily have been Game of the Year. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The Game of the Year for this year is, I've actually split up my Game of the Year stuff into talking about specific things because I can't pick a Game of the Year. I can't do like a top five. It's impossible. So I'm doing like soundtracks, which I've already done, and now I'm going to work on stories, and then I'll do something else.
Yeah, it's been a bit like that. We've had a lot of trouble picking the Games of the Year for our own awards as well. I hope you've all been following along with those because we have started to unveil them. We got another 2 weeks of them, one per day, so stay tuned.
PUBG won Best Narrative, right?
Yeah, of course it did. let's get some music going. Let's get everybody in the mood. As usual, we'll kick off with a Hatsune Miku track. I have picked this week Sen Bon Sakura, which is probably, well, it's got to be one of the most famous Miku songs for sure. You can get entire CDs of remixes of this song and orchestral versions. And yeah, it's a big one. So enjoy, and then we'll get back and we'll start talking about the JRPG.
Thank you.
And welcome back. So, obviously, this week did bring us a very big JRPG release from Nintendo to the Nintendo Switch. Obviously, I'm talking about Xenoblade Chronicles 2 here. This is a game that people have been looking forward to since the Switch was first unveiled, and the response to the game has been pretty good overall. It is a pretty good game, I think. We've got obviously got a review up at DDNet. I gave it a solid 8 out of 10. I think you gave it, what, a 9 out of 10, Jay? Is that right?
Yeah, I don't really... I try not to put a numerical value. If somebody pushed me, it would be, 9 out of 10.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, obviously we both enjoyed it. The reviews generally have been pretty positive. I think it hovers actually around the same Metacritic average as Nier. I don't know if that's accurate way of describing the game. I think Nier's a little bit stronger, but yeah, overall it's pretty good. What did you like about it?
I liked pretty much everything. I mean, except some of the voice acting, but I really enjoyed the combat in this one. I really enjoyed the story in this one. I pretty much enjoyed everything. The world, I think it's been great.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's certainly, the thing I found most enjoyable about it is definitely the combat, the MMO-ish combat system has been really refined to a point where it's very deep, it's very tactical, and it's quite dynamic, which makes it visually interesting to watch. And there's a good range of enemies, and
yeah, the enemy just variety is out of this world. I think this I'm still finding like sort of newish things that I don't remember seeing before.
Yeah, absolutely. And as anybody who's played a Xenoblade game knows, being quite open in design, you'll come across enemies that are obviously well beyond your ability to start with. I think there's like a level 90 enemy just outside the first town that you come across.
Yeah, that damn monkey Gormot.
Yeah, that's the one. There's a giant, bigger.
Yeah, I've been one-shot by that a couple of times.
And if you run into him, you're toast for sure for the longest period of time. He's about level 90, so you have to go back and fight him. But I guess it's nice to know that there is that guy there sitting there waiting for you when you get to the end game and can start playing around with it, and it certainly gives you a goal, I guess, to look towards. I think the narrative is quite good in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. For me, it's kind of two-tone, and I didn't like that, I must admit, as I kind of mentioned in my review. There's this kind of odd mix in the game between very heavily anime-style and very heavily humor-based narrative. It's almost like something that you'd expect to come from Compile Heart for about half the narrative, and then the other half the narrative is this kind of in-depth, deep, philosophical look about questions like what is God, spirituality, environmentalism. It's got all these really deep themes, which is
the Xenoblade, like that second half is what Xenoblade is.
Yeah, and for me, I look back to the original Xenoblade Chronicles, it was much more heavily weighted towards that. There was a little bit of humor in there, there was a little bit of fan service, all that kind of stuff. There was a little bit of it, but it was overwhelmingly a kind of a serious story. This one has a much, it seems like they
tried to balance it out a bit more. It's two games, yeah.
And it doesn't gel well for me. And I think that's where a lot of the discussion around the game is kind of gravitated towards since it got released, I guess, and people have started to play it. You know, there has been a fair bit of criticism about the way that the fan service and the nonsense that the game gets up to. And I think for me anyway, the issue is that it just doesn't gel very well with the other half of the story, and it's odd to have this really serious conversation in one cutscene and then immediately after have, you know, visual gags about a woman's chest or, her weight or whatever. It's odd. It's odd. It's really odd. And it doesn't... I never quite got it when I was playing, you know. I got to the end of the game and I was still feeling like, you know, why is there these two tones going on within the game? I don't think they integrated them very well, which was a bit of a downer, I must admit.
Well, I've got a couple of thoughts on it. And one, it didn't really bother me at all. I actually kind of liked it in a way, because I felt like all that stuff, they used that for the humor. And like the other games aren't known for humor, but like especially in Xenoblade Chronicles X, there is this really forced humor where they like try and drill a joke into your head like over and over and over again. And they're just like, this is funny. And like, but it's not funny. Like Lynn in Xenoblade Chronicles X, in every single cutscene where you go, like where you have dinner, basically, which is like at the end of every major story piece, you go and you cook a meal, she will make a joke about eating the Nopon that's there because he looks like a little potato. And she will do that every cutscene. And they're just trying to like drill a joke into your head. And it's not funny. It might have been funny the first time. It's not funny after the 20th.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this, at least it's like, it's varied and it is genuinely funny. Like not all of it, but a lot of it is just like naturally funny. Just, I remember watching a Heart to Heart with Naya and that Naya and Jomark, and that was just genuinely funny.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree that there's a lot of good humor in there. And for me, it's kind of, it plays to that kind of harem, anime sense of humor, and it's a good one. And I like that usually. And I'm certainly not saying that, you know, I'm certainly not criticizing it in itself. And you know, I love the Hyperdimension Neptunia games. I love, you know, Gust's sense of humor when it makes, you know, comedy games. I like that sense of humor that Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has going. It's just, it doesn't gel with the serious side of things. It's
like, oh, yeah, and I totally get that.
It's like if you took Nier Automata or actually Nier Automata has a sense of humor itself. It's like if you took Final Fantasy 15 and took scenes, random scenes from Hyperdimension Neptunia, and then you stuck the random scenes of Hyperdimension Neptunia into Final Fantasy 15 and then just left them there without explaining what was going on. That's the disconnect that I feel in the game, and I just can't believe that Monolith Software, being the experienced developer it is, having all the resources of Nintendo behind it, just didn't catch on to that maybe there is that disconnect between the two stories that it's trying to tell.
Well, this is my other thing on this, is that because I love Takahashi, who is CEO and director of Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and CEO of Monolith Soft. He did a lot of interviews like prior to Xenoblade Chronicles 2 coming up, and like way back in 2015, he had an interview after Xenoblade Chronicles X, and he said that it was basically talking about the stories that he does, the deep, dark, you know, like deep stories, it weighs down on him, and that he might like to start doing some more lighthearted stories. And people sort of forgot about him making that comment. And now Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has come out, and it feels like he did try and make a lighter story, but then he couldn't stop being himself. Like he got about, you know, like he started doing it and he's like, yeah, you know, this is fun and this is much better. It's a lighter story. And then he decided, wait a minute, but this isn't me. And then he just flipped it and did his normal stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that happening, I guess. I still can't, it really does feel to me like it comes from two different people. And I vaguely remember at the opening credits of the game, it seemed to list two producers. Is that right? Two directors, two producers, two story writers. I saw one of the creative credits.
The director is still just Takahashi, but I think there are multiple producers.
Right. Right. I don't know where it comes from. It just feels to me like there was more than one creative leading Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and they didn't talk as much as they perhaps needed to integrate the cutscenes or something. Yeah. It's odd. It's not.
Yeah, it is an odd mix. Yeah, it is an odd mix. As I say, like, it's going to affect different people differently. Like, to me, it didn't really bother me, the shifts. But then again, I mean, I don't know why it didn't really bother me. I do like a narrative consistency in games, but yeah, I wasn't too put off by this.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not saying it's bad. I certainly enjoyed the game enough to obviously play it through and
And give it an 8 out of 10.
It's better than that. And give it a positive spin. I certainly wasn't critical of I certainly wasn't critical of it as a game to play and enjoy. I just feel, to me, to compare that to some of the other greats of 2017, as we mentioned in the intro, there's been an unending supply of them. And I look to Persona 5, for example, which is an overly long game and it has issues of its own, but one of the things it nailed was mixing that sense of humor and a serious plot. Nier Automata did exactly the same thing. It has a sense of humor and it mixed it with a very serious plot very well. Yeah. Or, you know, you look at Yakuza 0, which doesn't have such a serious plot, but it has, you know, that rich sense of humor and it's very consistent through the narrative.
Yeah, and I think Yakuza does that really well. It's one of the series that does a semi-serious story, but in a hilariously comedic way.
It's just consistent. So even when it's telling a serious, or it has its serious moments, it's still consistent with the humorous part. It's
not absolutely,
yeah. It's not like that break. It's not like you've got one scene, okay, this is a serious scene, cut. Oh, this is comedy scene, cut. They talk together, they meld together. The writing around them is more consistent and linked. So, yeah, I look at those kind of three games. For me, those are kind of the three JRPGs of 2017, and everything else kind of sits a little bit underneath it. And Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is kind of in that second tier as a result, purely of the writing. The gameplay's great. The open world's great. I have a little bit of issues with the technical side of things as well. And I know we've discussed this on Twitter. For me, especially when I'm playing on handheld, the game seems to have an issue with distance, presenting distance. It seems...
blurred
out to me.
I heard... I've actually heard this from a couple of reviews now, and I have now seen side-by-side screenshots. Like, I played the majority of it in docked mode because I was recording gameplay the entire time through a capture card. And... every time I pulled it out of the dock, I actually felt that it looked better, like a little bit sharper. But I realized that it's things in the foreground that look sharper in handheld. Yeah. Like the character models look really good. And I can totally understand now what you mean by the further away things get a bit blurry.
Yeah, it looks good in close, and I always played the game with the camera zoomed right in close because I enjoyed the dynamics that it gave to the combat and things like that. And it was sharp, and it was, you know, there was a lot of color, there was a lot of energy, it looked really good. It was just when I panned things back to kind of look at the scene, especially, you know, when I was standing on top of a mountain or something and kind of, you know, surveying, you know, everything that's around, because I like to do that in games. And yeah, there was a lot of blur going on in the background, which is not what I like to see in my open world games, I guess.
Yeah, it is this from the side-by-side screenshots I've seen, it is significantly sharper in docked mode. But I mean, yeah, that's obviously the compromise they took to have it undocked. Like, sometimes they knock down frame rates, sometimes they look down resolutions. It just seems like they couldn't do either of those things because they were already at their limit there, so they just had to downgrade fidelity for things further away.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because obviously Zelda Breath of the Wild still looks gorgeous when you're looking, you know, surveying the entire world in front of you. And I was kind of going in expecting that this game would meet that, which it doesn't, in terms of draw distance and stuff. It's still obviously, you know, as good as JRPGs have ever looked on a handheld. So compared to the Vita, compared to what the Vita and the 3DS were capable of, it's a massive step up. And I'm not.
It is nuts to see, like, basically all these games coming out on Switch are handheld games, and it's nuts to see that that's what can be done on a handheld nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I've lost my dock. I don't use my Switch for in dock at all. It's a purely handheld console for me. So I've only got that point of reference, and I'm amazed by what the Switch is doing, and I'm amazed by the fact that here I have this, you know, amazing JRPG on the console ready to go. But again,
it's not the best it could have been. And here's because I was looking up earlier when we were talking about the director. So we were kind of, I was wrong. The executive director is Takahashi. He does basically control everything, but the game officially has two directors, Ko Kojima and Genki Yokota.
And that might be, you know, where that disconnect comes from, depending on how much control those two had over individual cutscenes and things.
Yeah.
They may have actually split it 50-50. And
there was also three writers. Takahashi obviously is the main writer, and then there were two underneath him.
Yeah, so it depends how they split up the creative work. To me, it feels like it was actually a very distinct split between each of the creatives, and I don't think that's a very good way of going when telling stories. I think it's better to have, you know, an executive, you know, a single executive voice, and then people under that kind of execute. But talking back to it's like, yeah, I like the way that film is made generally. Generally, film has a single director who handles, you know, most of the creative decisions, and the other creatives around them constantly report back, and the director has oversight to it all. To me, it feels like there wasn't that oversight role as much as it needed to be to make sure that there was a cohesiveness within the game. So,
yeah, well, they did. Monolith Soft did announce they're already working on their new game, and I don't know how. Obviously, if Takahashi wrote Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and he just sort of kept checking in every now and then, and he let his two directors go for that while he was working on this new thing, perhaps maybe that was how it went. On the technical side too. That, you know, we were talking about the blurriness in the further away. It might come down to the fact that they started working on Xenoblade Chronicles 2 without even knowing what the tech specs of the Switch were. And obviously it had a much shorter turnaround than their usual turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to remember that this is only the first year of the Switch. developers are still getting...
And Monolith Soft are usually known for pushing the most out of Nintendo, out of the limited Nintendo hardware. Like, Xenoblade Chronicles X is pretty amazing to be running on the Wii U, and the original Xenoblade Chronicles is pretty amazing to be running on what is essentially a GameCube.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, it's going to take a while for developers to get across this stuff. Even Nintendo itself is going to get better over the coming years with the Switch. So,
absolutely. You have a look at what was on the PlayStation 3 at launch and then what was on it at by the end of its cycle. I don't like The Last of Us, but man, that looks so damn good for a PS3 game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so after all that conversation about Xenoblade Chronicles, we'll have a bit of music, I think, from the game. This is Elysium in the Blue. One thing that I think everybody who plays the game will not be able to deny is that it has a gorgeous soundtrack. So enjoy, and we will come back and have a bit chat about something a bit different. Welcome back. So, as we've mentioned a couple of times so far in the podcast, it's been a pretty busy year for games, especially if you happen to be a fan of JRPGs, with JRPGs tending to take up more time. and that means that I think it's pretty much impossible to have played everything that you might have wanted to play over the year. So that would mean for most people, they've been adding to their backlogs, and hopefully, with Christmas being a little bit quieter, though in saying that, we've just had Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Star Ocean 4, and Tokyo Xanadu is on its way as well. So there's a lot of new releases coming out in December as well, but I would hope...
Omega Quintet on Steam, if you haven't played that on PS4.
There's that as well. So there's still plenty of releases coming out, but I think for most people, it would be safe to say there will be a little bit of downtime at least between releases by the end of December and early January. So it might be a chance, or it should be a chance, to catch up on at least one or two games. So, Jay, what are you going to be catching up on? Have you missed anything this year that you really feel an urge to make up for?
I missed .hack, which I have, and I'm keen to play it, because I didn't actually play the originals on PS2, and I'm just keen to give it a go. And it seemed like a semi-big release that just got... It just got covered by so many other things that I had to play and do at the time.
Yeah, because that's a collection, isn't it?
It's a HD collection, and it was a trilogy of games, and then they added a fourth to this, so now it's just a quadrilogy of games.
There you go. It's probably, 200 hours worth of playing there then?
Yeah, I think from what I've seen, it sort of progressively ramps up. I don't know if that's right or not, but it seems like some people are getting through, like, you know, the earlier games in 20 or 30 hours.
Right.
So it shouldn't be too bad, hopefully.
Still, 4 games times 20 hours is still 80 hours.
Yeah, exactly. It's still a big time sink.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't played those myself. I haven't actually got the game yet. I've had a look at it a couple of times, but yeah, it's definitely something that's
It's like a Sword Art Online-y type thing, like before that was an anime.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the anime for .hack, and that's definitely what its basis is. It's that same kind of story about, you know, people within a virtual world. So yeah, I'm interested in seeing the game. I don't know. As long as it's better than the Sword Art Online games, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I didn't mind the last Sword Art Online game, but yeah, they haven't been that great. There's a bunch of like handheld games too. Etrian Odyssey 5, which I've only played about 5 hours of. Coldcept Revolt, which I haven't played at all yet.
Oh, that's amazing, that one.
Yeah, I have heard.
I love that. That's one of my favorite games.
Happened to come out the exact same day as Cyber Dimension Neptunia, and then like 4 days later was Etrian, and then 3 days later was Fire Emblem Warriors, and then a week later was Mario Odyssey and Knights of Azure 2.
Yeah, it has been a bit like that. Like I said, it's been a busy year.
What about you?
For me, I've got to catch up with Nintendo games. So I've only played... Well, I'm still in that tutorial plateau of Breath of the Wild. I really want to sit down and actually give it the time. I'm not sold on the game as a thing. I'm probably glad I didn't review it, because the Nintendo fanboys probably wouldn't have enjoyed my review.
I don't like Zelda, just to go off on a quick tangent. I don't really like Zelda because I hate the way that they send you into a dungeon with basically a specific dungeon-specific like item that is pretty much only used in the dungeon, and then that just drags on for so long. In like Wind Waker, when you get to the dungeons where you have to use your partner to, like, you know, the bird woman, to like, you have to use her as a partner, I hated that because it went on for like 2 hours. So I generally hate Zelda games, and I really liked Breath of the Wild.
I want to believe that I'll like it once I get past this tutorial thing. It came out at a bad time, and I just wasn't sold on it. Especially, you know, around Nier Automata and Yakuza and stuff when it was released. I'm hoping it'll be good. I love Ocarina of Time. I'm still waiting for a Zelda game to get up to that standard. People keep telling me this one is, so hopefully I'll get some time over Christmas to give it a proper go. I haven't even played Mario Odyssey yet. So
wow, that was so, I had a lot of fun in that, and I also don't really like Mario games.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm keen on it. I just haven't had a chance to look at it yet. My game around that time was Fire Emblem Warriors, and I kind of stuck to that, gave Odyssey to another one of the journos on the team to review and stuff. So yeah, those two are on there. In terms of JRPG specifically, I have the second Utawara Rumono game to play. Now, that came out when I was in Japan this year, so it's been sitting there on my PS4 just waiting for me to get to it. I really love the first one. Really, really love the first one. So
they're both on my backlog at the moment. I haven't even touched either of them.
I'm so keen on this. I really, like I said, I really love the first one. It's a very heavy mix of visual novel. It's probably mostly, I'd say, a visual novel. And then it has a couple of tactics RPG scenes in there. But yeah, the art style's beautiful. The story is, it's fan servicey, but it's also based on native Japanese culture. So it's something that's very different to what we usually see. And yeah, it's really well written, and it's good stuff. So I'm looking forward to getting stuck into the second one. It's another long game. It'll probably take me another 60, 70 hours to finish. So that's the first one.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, you are looking at about 180 hours or so, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're gonna have to set some time aside for that.
Yeah. I swear, if in 2018... Yeah, if in 2018 all the developers sit down together and decide, yep, we're not going to make a JRPG longer than 30 hours, I'll be happy. Because this length...
Which creep... used to be a long game back in the day. Remember when that was long?
I know, this length creep is ridiculous. You don't
like
need...
That was like a multi-disc PS1 game back then.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need a game to last that long to tell the story. I mean, at 120 hours or whatever for Persona 5, you're looking at a game that in raw length would be longer than, you know, War and Peace to read, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah, the games don't need to be that long. I think that they should give you the option to be that long, you know, just making a bunch of side quests and stuff so you can sort of choose. Like, if they made side quests that you weren't obligated to do, yeah, that's fine, because then people could choose to spend a lot of time in the game rather than being forced to play 120 hours just to finish the main story.
Yeah, if Nier Automata can tell a story of the kind of depth and intensity that it does in a 10-hour run-through, and yes, you do have to play the game a couple of times to get the full story, but the basic story is done in 10 hours.
A good one. Like,
yeah, exactly. If Nier Automata can do that, there's no excuse for any other developer, I'm sorry. 30 hours is for me is the upward limit of where you can say this game has to be this long to tell the story it needs to tell. Any longer than that, and you're pushing things.
Just look at Persona 5. A lot of that stuff could be stripped away, and it would still be the exact same story.
Exactly, exactly. The only game where I could see an argument to say it should be that long is, funnily enough, Persona 4, which at 60 hours felt the right length. I don't think there was too much they could have stripped out of that one to keep the narrative integrity there. So other than that, and that's a top 10 game of all time, and it shouldn't be... taking a standard. I don't think any JRPG should be more than 30 hours, personally. But
yeah,
I know that's controversial to say because for some reason people want length rather than quality and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I like the option at least because I don't mind a long game. I like getting lost in the world. Like, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has been really good. It is a long game, but I've certainly chosen to spend a lot longer than most people will in it because, but before I was at chapter 5, I was already at 93 hours played, and that's basically halfway through the main story.
Yeah, look, I get lost in games too, and I got lost in Persona 5 when I played it through, and I got to the end and had a great time with it. I'm not saying it's a bad game by any means, but I'll never play it again because it is that long.
Yes,
I know it's such a time commitment to sit down there. And if it's a game that I really love, I want to play it again. I can see myself picking up Nier Automata, every year going on out because it's only going to take me 10 hours to run through, a character's story in it. And that's great. And that allows me to commit the time to it and then still do other things. Whereas if I'm to ever play for Persona 5 again, I'm going to have to sit down there and really, block out 2 weeks of time and do nothing else but play this game. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of Semi on that topic, and Semi on the topic at hand of things on the backlog, World of Final Fantasy is out on Steam now as well. And that was, I really enjoyed that, and I'm going to revisit that shortly on PC.
Yeah, that's a lovely little game. If you missed that one, definitely give it a go. I think that's probably one that did get added to a lot of people's backlogs because it did come out, I remember, at a pretty awkward time with other stuff that was coming out at the time.
I loved it. Actually loved it. I thought the cool, like, Pokemon-y stuff is cool, like the collector creatures. The turn-based battle system is really cool because all of the monster capturing stuff is taken into account, creating stacks, all that stuff. I thought it was a really cool game.
Yeah, it was lovely, and it was especially good for people who have been fans of Final Fantasy because it just kept referencing back to old Final Fantasy games. I don't think it would be a game that would resonate nearly as strongly for somebody who hasn't got the heritage in Final Fantasy. But
yeah, that's true, yeah.
But if you have played, you know, let's say half of the Final Fantasy games, you will have a great time with that one just by, you know, from pure nostalgia that it taps into. And that's a good thing. It's good that Square Enix is continuing to recognize these things, even as it experiments with more modern stuff with Final Fantasy 15 and whatever.
Yeah, there are, and World of Final Fantasy was apparently successful enough that they're making a mobile game now and continuing the series.
Yeah, that's good. It should be.
Yeah.
It should be. They should also get onto a Chocobo Dungeon while they're at it, but, you know.
They're never going to remake that. They're never going to go back to that series. Matt,
they need to go back to that series.
I know, but they're never going to.
I'm about to start a Twitter campaign, and my Twitter campaigns work. So I got leaning to Fire Emblem Warriors. I'm going to
you were definitely directly responsible for that.
Yeah, it was absolutely my campaign. And I will definitely get a new Chocobo Dungeon. You mark my words. Speaking of Final Fantasy, let's have some Final Fantasy music, I think, because we're actually going to talk about it a bit more in the third section anyway. This is Terra's theme from Final Fantasy VI. It is right up there with the very best Final Fantasy bits of music that have ever been composed, and it'll put you in a good mood for the next section. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Okay, so the best Final Fantasy games. There's been so many of them, and obviously anybody who plays JRPGs and likes their Japanese games has played at least a couple of these. I would hope most of them, and everybody has their own favorites. I think those favorites will change greatly from one person to the other, and whenever you have this discussion, you end up with all kinds of heated debate, and that's actually a discussion I don't think we've actually had on the podcast to date, so I figured, why not, since we've got JRPG specialist on the podcast and it's just me and him, let's talk about this, let's have it out. So it is Final Fantasy 12 is the best Final Fantasy. This is a statement of fact. It is a statement of fact. And it is the best for numerous reasons. It has an amazing cast of characters, with the exception, funnily enough, of the nominally lead character, Vaan, who's meant to be the lead character of the game. Doesn't end up being the lead character of the game anyway, because he's the least interesting of the lot, and I think even the developers realized that and paid more attention to Balthier and Ash, who are the actual best characters in the game. And yeah, it's a different Final Fantasy because it has that very different setting. It's kind of a semi-Middle Eastern style setting, which is distinctive and quite beautiful. If you haven't played it, the game before, have a look at it on the PS4 with the upper res. It's absolutely gorgeous, and distinctive and creative. And the combat system is interesting. It's different again, but quite deep. And yeah, it has one of those rare Final Fantasy games where the moral core of the story, because all the Final Fantasy games are obviously stories have good versus evil, you know, evil empires, good heroes, warriors alike, all that kind of stuff. Final Fantasy 12 actually mixes that up and gives you really, you know, good questions to ask about, you know, are you on the right side in this particular game? So the fact that it made me think as I was playing it was quite, you know, positive. And when I played it back on the PS2 for the first time, I absolutely loved it. I love it even more playing it again this year. And I would definitely put that as my favorite Final Fantasy, which is odd because it's probably the most different and the least Final Fantasy-like of all the Final Fantasies. But yeah, it's my favorite.
The problem with Final Fantasy 12 for me is I can never forgive it. Basically, I think it has one of the worst opening 5 hours of gameplay from any game I've ever played. I think the fact that they hold the Gambit system hostage and don't even tell you about it until you've significantly progressed is so stupid, because the combat system without the Gambit system is stupid and boring and tedious and crap. And I just think it's such a bad way to like introduce the game, to like put into people's heads that the combat is going to be bad when it's really not. Like, it's the second you get the Gambit system, it's fine. Like, you actually now have control, you have more control and you can do stuff. And to like hold it back for so I could understand doing a couple of battles without it, but like having to basically do like the opening 3 to 4 hours of game before you get it is so stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't notice that at any stage.
I never played Final Fantasy 12 back in the day because I actually didn't have a PS2 at the end, like when it came out, because it was right towards the end of that cycle. So I never played it originally. And going back to the HD, I was like, why does this game have such a bad opening? And yeah, it always stuck with me, even though I ended up really liking the game.
Well, for me, I mean, I remember playing it back in the day, and the combat system didn't even register with me for the first couple of hours because the world itself was so interesting. And I think that was what the developer, what Square Enix was really focused on the first time around, was making sure people were fully immersed in the world before they really got hit with the complexities of the combat system and the Gambit system that you mentioned. So, yeah, I didn't really notice that. I can certainly appreciate that it is a slow burner of a game. It starts off slowly, but you are talking about the first 5 hours in what? A 60-hour odd RPG.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's not so bad. It's more like, yeah, it's more like what would be a tutorial section in a normal JRPG is just a really awful section in Final Fantasy 12. And that's I think it's important to stress that to people so they don't just pick it up and then drop it, because it does get better, everyone. And it's not like, it's not, oh, you have to play it 30 hours like Final Fantasy 13 better. It's like, you just have to play it a couple of hours and it's better.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I didn't mind playing through Final Fantasy 13. I really love that game, and that game
was better. Oh, so do I. I appreciate Final Fantasy 13 and its trilogy much more than I appreciate Final Fantasy 15.
Final Fantasy 13 stops being a tutorial about two battles before the end boss. It's still teaching you stuff about 40 hours into it. So, yeah, I don't mind these things. I do appreciate that they are slow burners for some people, and some people will drop the games before they really get into them. But I kind of don't care about those people. If you're gonna judge the quality of the game, you can finish it. We keep getting told that as critics, so people can take
that on board
themselves. And yeah, you know, as taken as a complete package, Final Fantasy XII is the strongest game I think in the series.
You are wrong though.
No, I'm not wrong. I'm totally right. But I mean, it's not the only one. I love most of the Final Fantasy games, almost all of them, in fact. You know, looking at after XII. Yeah, I'd quickly say probably Final Fantasy 8, 6, 4, and 1 are probably my other three. 4, my other five.
What?
So my top five would be, 8, 6, 4, and 1. That'd be my
what
top
five. What is wrong with you? 8? No, are you kidding?
I love 8. 8 was really great. 8.
You're nuts.
No, see, look, with 8, I really like the aesthetic for a start. As a PlayStation 1 game, I actually think what they did with it was really impressive. And it created a really great sense of world. It had a very distinctive world, again, because it had, you know, the Flying Gardens, and it had that real mix of, it looked like old technology, but it was advanced, if that makes sense. It had a setting that really pulled me in, and I liked some of the characters enough. I liked Sylphie. I really liked Irving. I liked Rinoa, and I even like kind of came to like Squirrel towards the end of it. And I really liked the combat system. I felt got tiring, yes, but in short bursts, and I would play it for, you know, an hour or so at a time. I really liked the draw system. I liked the complexities of I liked the number of summons. And at the time, you know, having those massive summons do those massive, you know, attack routines, and just collecting those was a really appealing thing for me. So I found it really immersive. And coming off Final Fantasy VII, which didn't resonate so strongly with me, and I know that's controversial to say, but it didn't.
Final Fantasy VII is not the best Final Fantasy, like most people will say.
But yeah, for me, I didn't find myself that immersed in Final Fantasy VII, and I found it, that game, to be quite ugly, even back in the day.
Final Fantasy VIII, it was an ugly game.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VIII was quite beautiful and immersive, and it was kind of what I wanted from Final Fantasy from that point on. So games that kind of delivered on that kind of quality, Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy XII, Final Fantasy XIII, they were kind of extensions of what went into Final Fantasy VIII for me.
All right, so let's talk about the actual best Final Fantasy now, which is Final Fantasy IX. By far the best Final Fantasy of all time.
God.
How is it not the best Final Fantasy of all time? The entire cast of characters is likable. The story is amazing, and it jumps between all the characters equally. Everybody gets a payoff. Even minor characters get payoffs. Beatrix, who is my favorite character in Final Fantasy IX, is basically a minor nothing nobody character, and she gets an entire character arc. Compare that to like Final Fantasy 15, where the only goddamn interesting character is Ravis, and he gets like 3 hours of fucking game time and no payoff and no story arc, no nothing. Final Fantasy IX has the best soundtrack of any Final Fantasy. It has the best story of any Final Fantasy. It has the best characters of any Final Fantasy. I've played it like through like 10, 11, 12 times, I think, fully from start to finish. And I love it every single time.
Yeah, it's the only Final Fantasy I've never finished.
You're insane.
I've never finished it. I've actually started to play it like 6 or 7 times, and every time I say, yep, this time I'm actually going to get to the end. And I just can't. I'm just not that. I don't think it's a bad game. I don't think it's a bad Final Fantasy. I can see where the appeal is for other people. But again, it just didn't resonate with me. It didn't have the characters I wanted. Didn't have the narrative I wanted. I appreciated that they tried to do the traditional fantasy thing. But I don't know. It just... it wasn't the right fit for me. And that's...
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, if you liked, if you, as you say, if you liked 8, which I don't like, then, you know, 9's probably not going to be your thing. Like, we can just leave it like that, really. Which is something that the Final Fantasy series doesn't really do anymore. They don't really... Like, the main series titles don't switch gears so quickly between titles. You know, like, yeah, Final Fantasy 15 is basically Final Fantasy 13, but on a more Earth-like planet rather than something a little bit more surreal. But, I mean, they're so close in every feel and stuff. It's just doesn't happen anymore.
It's Square Enix, I think, with Final Fantasy is doing... It's got the main numbered games, which it uses to sell the kind of the mainstream blockbuster kind of appeal, or what Square Enix sees as a mainstream blockbuster JRPG. So they're quite safe. Final Fantasy 15, given the attention that was going into open world games when it was in development, given the just given the way that games are, major games are structured, Final Fantasy 15 makes sense. Final Fantasy 13 at the time also kind of made sense in. It didn't turn out probably the way Square Enix wanted or a lot of fans wanted it to, but it was structured in a way that you could tell that it was a safe game in terms of the predominant development attitudes that were going on at the time. Where Square Enix tends to experiment now is more with the kind of side games. So World of Final Fantasy, for example, is a very...
Exactly, it's a hugely experimental game, and I loved it.
And if it was a numbered Final Fantasy game, it would be that shift between Final Fantasy 15 to the next one. So if it was to be, say, Final Fantasy 16, it would obviously be an entirely different game, and it would be that kind of difference between Final Fantasy 8 and Final Fantasy 9 to Final Fantasy 15, Final Fantasy 16. But it's not. It's something different now. Final Fantasy Type-0 is another game that came out on the PS4 early on, and it would be, you know, it could easily have been called Final Fantasy 15 itself because...
Yeah. Exactly, but it came out on PSP originally, and it was just a side project, essentially, for them at the time.
Yeah, and as a result, it feels like that kind of Final Fantasy, traditional Final Fantasy or experimental Final Fantasy, or, you know...
It feels like a new Final Fantasy, one they would normally give a number.
It feels like a Final Fantasy for the fans of Final Fantasy. That's what I'm searching for here. It feels like it was a game made for Final Fantasy fans, whereas the numbered Final Fantasy games seem to be games made to draw in new fans to the franchise. So Final Fantasy 15, I think, was designed to appeal to people who weren't necessarily Final Fantasy fans. But yeah. World of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy Type-0, all these ones that aren't numbered Final Fantasies that on the PlayStation...
They are for the fans, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that, you know, like... that those games are, and Type-0 is pretty long, but I mean World of Final Fantasy is on the short side because obviously it was just a side project for them,
and that was why it was so good.
Yeah.
short
I know, but it was so short. It was a little bit too short for my liking.
Yes, but no, I mean, I don't know, I quite like that it was that short because again it was brief and I could just enjoy it and then move on. So discussion about, you know, the length of the game aside, I think that game would have been a numbered Final Fantasy back on the PlayStation. But
yeah, without
the new,
like,
strategy,
without without the sort of like fan service, like without the sort of nostalgia trip, I think like basically that base game, as in the battle system, the mechanics, even the art style and stuff, that could definitely be a numbered thing. I don't think they'd ever number a thing and just make it purely about nostalgia from previous Final Fantasies. I think that was put in just to sell this project as an offshoot.
Well, I'd probably say that Final Fantasy IX was itself nostalgic.
Yeah, well, that they were supposed to be the last hurrah for the high fantasy Final Fantasies. Well, and then they sort of did a hybrid of Final Fantasy X, but it was still, yeah.
Well, Final Fantasy IX was definitely a callback to the Super Nintendo and Nintendo Final Fantasies. So
yeah,
it was itself playing on nostalgia, and that's why a lot of people loved it so much. So I don't think that, you know, I don't think it's...
I don't think they'd be like so direct though to be like, hey, here is Cloud, and here is Warrior of Light, and here is, like, I don't think they would, I don't think they put a numbered Final Fantasy being that nostalgic.
Yeah, they wouldn't use characters from previous games, that's for sure.
Yeah, but yeah.
There's every chance that Final Fantasy 16 could be, I guess, a throwback to, you know, Final Fantasy 10s and 12s and whatever of the world. I don't know.
I want to know who they've chosen for director, because that throws it up. Basically, from what I've seen and what I've heard, all the interviews and all that kind of stuff, it's always basically the director they choose, it basically chooses what the game is. Like, they sort of decide what they want to make, and Square Enix just lets them go with it. Unless you are Nomura and you can't do it after 11 years, so you have to bring in someone else. But,
well, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't go back to the same guy that took over Final Fantasy 15. He seems to be the new one.
What's his name?
Square Enix likes to stick with directors for their major series as much as possible.
I imagine that Final Fantasy 16 is already in development, because that's just Square Enix's bag. If it's not, then we're going to be waiting the next 10 years for it.
It's possible. I mean, Final Fantasy 15 was such an investment for Square Enix in the end. They've clearly got a plan for it to go for a while yet. And they'll keep creating new DLC stories and things like that, I think, into the short term, that's for sure. I don't think we've seen the end of that game by any means yet. There may well be a Final Fantasy 15 2 at some point, based on what they did with Final Fantasy 13. So I think it's a while before we hear about Final Fantasy 16. I do think that Square Enix has got themselves to a point now where they're quite happy with the creative teams they've got. They've got the guy, Yoshi P, looking after the MMOs, and they're happy with the work he's doing. So Final Fantasy 14, Dragon Quest 10, he'll handle those. I think this guy that did Final Fantasy 15, and I can't remember his
Tabata.
Name.
Tabata. He took over from Nomura.
Yeah, he took over. He also was the one that was responsible for the port of Type-0, and he did a great job with that. And he did a good job, I think, with shaping Final Fantasy 15 up to commercial release. So I think they'll stick with him for Final Fantasy 16.
Well, he did say he's been in an interview. He actually said that he wants to work on his own game from start to finish, because he actually hasn't done that yet. He's only worked on other people's projects. Like, he's been director of games, but he's come in afterwards, like after their directors were not getting the job done. So he's never been able to fully enact his vision, I guess.
Yeah, which would suggest to me.
But he still has a lot of work to do on Final Fantasy 15. They still have that, like, season pass content all the way through 2018.
Yes. We won't see a Final Fantasy 16 announced next year. I think it'll be 2019 when it gets announced. It'll probably be a faster development cycle. I don't think it'll be 10 years, because Final Fantasy 15 had the development difficulties, which ended up with, you know, Tabata being brought on board. And that's not going to happen again, because I think he's a much more solid director for the series, and it'll probably be a 4 or 5.
He's an actual director and not a really amazing character designer that has no sense of time management.
Well, Nomura was also, he's also an executive at Square Enix itself. So he's got business responsibilities outside of the game development.
Yeah,
stuff,
that is also the problem, because it seems to be like he has way too much on his plate at all times.
He does. And that's certainly the problem. And I don't think that this guy will have the same issue, because he's a development resource. So that will, we won't find out about Final Fantasy 16 until probably the end of the year, if not the year after. But I think it'll be quicker. I think it'll probably be close to a launch game for the PlayStation 5 or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, after all of that, we'll wrap the podcast this week. It's been a longer one. We've had a lot to chat about. There's been good conversation. We'll finish this music up with a track from Tokyo Xanadu, which, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, is coming out soon. It's a Persona-like. It'll wrap up the year of JRPGs pretty well, I think, without giving spoilers or breaking embargo. It's an enjoyable one. So look forward to that. Enjoy this music. It's called Bravely Storm, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.